in chapter 9, it seems as though some of the things that Solomon is saying is he's kind of shifted gears here a little bit. Is, you know, our life above the sun, we have things to look forward to beyond. And he's getting a bigger view and a better view of what life under the sun really is. It's in view of that which is to come. Because in this life, we all have a common destiny. That is, we will all die. And so as he is now reflecting on life and all of the things that he has studied and learned and experimented with in life, he's giving to us some practical applications. And as we get into chapter 10, some of those applications are just continuing. Some different points are being made now, but he's still just making applications that we can relate to and some things that we can learn from. And so as we get into chapter 10, the first few verses there as we begin, as dead flies give perfume a bad smell, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. The heart of the wise inclines to the right, but the heart of the fool to the left. Even as he walks along the road, the fool lacks sense and shows everyone how stupid he is. I wonder if Solomon could kind of get to the point here, what he's talking about. I mean, we're into a chapter now where just some very plain sayings, some very plain remarks that are being said. And we see this and we realize that this is after a lifetime of experience and just watching and seeing how some things unfold in life. You know, it's possible to live your whole life with the wrong perspective of some things. In some ways, it seems to me that that's what Solomon did for much of his life. And it seems that now maybe he is finally getting a better and a bigger grasp of what life really is and what it's about, and is making some applications from that that maybe could be helpful. In the workbook that we've been sort of using, you've noticed, and I told you this from the beginning, the workbook, more or less, is just to kind of keep us on track and to give you some things to kind of study a little bit and prepare for class. I don't refer to the book just a whole lot, not that book, referring to this book. But in chapter 10, and the author kind of relates, chapter 10 of the workbook, that is. The author relates a story that I thought was good, and I want to read it to you. Maybe you've read it, and if not, this is for you. And basically, he's saying, making this point, it's possible to live your whole life from the wrong perspective. And he relates a story about a little boy who finds an eagle's egg. He's unable to get up to the nest where the eagle nest is. That'd be pretty hard to get to. So he takes the egg and he puts it in the nest of a prairie chicken. Okay, that's pretty different. But, you know, so the story goes, what happened was sort of expected. You know, the prairie chicken sat on the egg with her other eggs and it hatched just like the other eggs hatched. Except that egg was actually an eagle's egg that hatched along with the prairie chicken. Well, what would happen to that eagle as time goes on? I mean, he's being raised by a prairie chicken. And that's all the eagle knows, is the life of a prairie chicken. And so the story goes, all his life, the eagle, thinking he was a prairie chicken, did what prairie chickens did. He scratched in the dirt for seeds and insects. He clucked and he cackled. And he flew in a thrashing of wings and feathers no more than a few feet off the ground. After all, that's how prairie chickens were supposed to fly. So he just did what prairie chickens did. He didn't really know he was an eagle. Years passed, and one day he saw a magnificent bird soaring in the heavens with scarcely a beat off of its strong golden wings. "What is that beautiful bird?" said the eagle to his neighbor. "Well, that's an eagle, the chief of birds," the neighbor replied. "But don't you give it a second thought. You could never be like him." Really? As far as he's concerned, he couldn't be. I mean, he was an eagle, but he didn't know it. He was raised by a prairie chicken, and he thought he was a prairie chicken. He flew like a prairie chicken. He clucked like a prairie chicken because that's all he knew. So the eagle never gave it a second thought. He did everything that a prairie chicken would do. I think in chapter 10, what our author is trying to make the point here, we can fly like an eagle or we can cluck like a prairie chicken. You know, we need to understand and figure out who we are. And we can make some choices in our lives about, you know, how we live and why we live. And I believe God has made us all to be eagles. But we can choose to live the life of a prairie chicken. And so as we get into chapter 10, let's start putting some things in perspective in this way. Trying to think and to understand what God has made us to be and what he expects us to be and what potential do we have to be and what are we going to do with that? You know, a fool acts like a fool. And there's a lot said in this chapter about a fool. I mean, I can remember growing up and my parents, you know, if I said something, I was, well, you're a fool, my parents got mad about that. Don't you call nobody a fool. I mean, they just thought that was just, boy, that's being really horrible to someone. That's unkind to call somebody a fool. I never fully understood, you know, their concern with that for a long time. But when you read through chapter 10 of Ecclesiastes, you can understand that when Solomon is, you know, when he calls somebody a fool, it's certainly not a compliment. You know, he's making the point here. Here's someone who can't see past the end of their nose, so to speak. Someone who has not thought through a situation, who's not given consideration to the bigger picture. And I can't help but wonder a little bit if that's not how Solomon lived his life to a certain degree. A man who had been given and blessed with much wisdom by God, and yet in some ways was a fool because he couldn't see the bigger picture. And sometimes we don't see the bigger picture. But through Solomon, God is giving us insight to see and to understand the bigger picture. When a fool acts like a fool, I mean, what is the result of that? You know, it's going to the analogy that Solomon begins with right here. How something small can destroy something of great value. You know, the perfumer who works hard, you know, to make this perfume that just smells so good, so amazing. And yet a stink bug flies into it and ruins the whole thing. How can a little bug like that just ruin the whole thing? And yet it can. One time, when Sandra went with me to Africa a few years ago, I had not warned her about stink bugs. I just didn't, that along with a lot of other things I didn't remember to remind her, and some things I didn't want to tell her about. She just needed to learn on her own. I wanted her to go with me. I didn't want her to change her mind and not go. But we were in this village, in a place called Dadaab. And we set up our tent. We were going to be staying for a couple of days. We're going to be there teaching. And near the door of the tent, there was a little bug. And Sandra stepped on it and quickly went and stepped on two or three more. And one of the brothers came up and said, no, 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 no. That was about all he could say. No, 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 no. And Sandra was saying, I'm just killing the bugs. But then she realized why you don't step on those bugs. It was an itty-bitty little bug, but it had a big stink to it. And I mean, it just kind of, I mean, everybody around was going, you know, like they all knew, it's like someone stepped on a stink bug, you know. Well, it was Sandra that did that. But it's just amazing that such a little bug can make such a big stink. Kind of like a fly falling into the perfume and ruining the perfume. And you can start thinking of several analogies that might be made with. As a dead fly gives perfume a bad smell, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. Isn't it amazing how you can do what you believe to be, you know, some make some good decisions in life and do some right things in life and live honorably, but then you do stupid. I mean, just one time, even. And it can change and tarnish your reputation for a long time. One foolish act can just destroy a reputation. Have you noticed? Have you experienced? No, don't put your hand up. Most of us have done stupid at some time or another, haven't we? Some of us multiple times, it seems. And I think that's what Solomon's talking about here. That even a life that has wisdom and honor in it, just a little bit of stupid can outweigh all the good. I mean, we can easily think of some, even in just in our lifetime, public figures, you know, that maybe have accomplished some good things in their time, but then they've done stupid. And their reputation is tarnished forever. I mean, maybe their good works are remembered, but what everybody remembers when it comes on the 6 o'clock news at night of their passing or something like that, what's going to be in that news is the stupid thing that they did. You know, I mean, Richard Nixon maybe accomplished some incredible things as far as foreign policy goes that some presidents have never done before. But we all think of Watergate when we think of Richard Nixon. You know, an act of foolishness can seemingly far outweigh the wisdom and honor that we've done or accomplished in life. I think that's what he's talking about. The heart of the wise inclines to the right, but the heart of the fool to the left. I'm thinking the idea here is that it's just far apart. You know, wisdom is far to one side, foolishness is far to the other. And even if you're running far to the side that's wise and you do foolish, it seems like it takes you all the way from one side to the other. And maybe that's sort of the idea with that. Even as he walks along the road, a fool lacks sense and shows everyone how stupid he is. That's pretty straightforward kind of talk, isn't it? But why do you think he's talking that way? Why do you think Solomon is explaining these things that way? I mean, tell me what you think about this. As we think of the perspective here of what Solomon's trying to present before us, why is he being so straightforward about it?
Because we need to watch our steps each and every day. This is, like you said, you can have a great reputation, but just at one time it seems like that. Then you get knocked down in day one and start all over again.
Mm-hmm. You have a hard time picking yourself up sometimes.
Someone who is a fool, and everybody knows he's a fool, when he acts foolishly, they expect that of him, because that's what he normally does. But if you take a guy who has a sterling reputation, and then he does something crazy, one time.
Spans out, doesn't it?
It just jumps right out at you.
Yeah.
And like you say, it ruins his reputation, and everybody knows it, because they don't expect that of him.
Yeah.
They expect that of this guy.
Yeah.
They don't expect that of this guy.
Yeah, unfortunately, we all have the opportunity. It's an equal opportunity kind of thing. We can all be fools at some time or another, so it seems.
Well, as a mom trying to raise kids, I can tell you this is a very hard thing to get them to understand, mm-hmm. particularly in the modern age. You mm-hmm. have all these social networks. Mm-hmm. And what I learned the hard way on Facebook a couple of years ago, and sometimes you put stuff up you just shouldn't put up. Mm-hmm. But what they don't understand is that this follows them for the rest of their life.
It goes everywhere.
You can't really delete it because it's out there. Yeah. You've got, and they look and they know, okay, you were saying, so says it, but look what you posted. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that, and that can cause your reputation and it follows you.
Yeah, but the more public you are, you know, I mean, if you do something right, well, wow, that's great. People know you did something right, but when you do stupid, everyone knows that too. That's right.
You know, you have the wrong acquaintances on these things.
That's true too.
That's who you hang with.
All right. What other lessons can we see? What other applications? Neil.
One of the things that I use with students of mine is someone's trying to be cool, they miss it by a letter.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, what a difference between cool and fool. I mean,
In some cases, it's a very thin line.
Yeah, very thin. That's right. Yeah.
In some cases, it's an imaginary line.
Good point.
One thing that strikes me about verse 1, you've got this perfumer's oil, and it's before the fly gets in it, it's 100% pure. Mm-hmm. Then that one fly gets in it.
Yeah.
And it's still 98% pure oil, you know, perfumer's oil, but it's got that 2%, and it ruins the whole thing.
And it'll never be 100% again.
It'll never be 100% again. It reminds me of truth. You have you got truth, and then if you mingle a little deception into that truth, it still could be 95% truth, but it's got 5% of a lie in it.
It's still wrong.
A lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tarnishes the whole thing.
Good point.
It's right. If you do things real well, everyone.
Always. Yeah, always. In that case.
But you have to remember, if a person makes one mistake, you got to clear that out of your mind. Remember all the good they have done.
Well,
you got to quit dwelling on that one mistake and judging that person by that one mistake when they've done the best they could.
That's the struggle. And that's the struggle, what we have to do.
Try to forget that part of them and keep the good part of them.
Yeah. And, you know, forgiveness that's found in Christ, I think in Colossians chapter 2, that's part of what the writer's trying to tell us there. Some things about forgiveness. How we need to forgive one another as Christ has forgiven you. Ooh. I mean, that's a powerful point.
What's happened to me?
And
one little slip of, and it followed me for 60 years.
Well, sure. Sure.
You know, people don't remember.
And that's reality. And that's what Solomon's talking about here. Yeah, that's true too. But that's what Solomon's talking about. That's the whole point right there, what Solomon's talking about. There can be a lot of good that's done, but if you do something that's foolish, it's going to ride with you. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah. And that's the segue into verses, you know, 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
You've messed up.
Yeah.
Don't give up.
Yeah.
Don't quit.
Yeah.
Because you can be forgiven of it if you keep working.
And another view of this whole thing about being a fool, part of what Solomon is going to say as we go on, the psalmist said it even another time, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. Their deeds are vile. There is no one who does good. This is the idea of the fool. This is from the perspective of the fool. The fool says there is no God. Just another perspective to be thinking about from the spiritual sense. Now we're not just talking about us making just, you know, being stupid sometime. Now we're talking about someone who is foolish from the standpoint of just stepping back and saying, there is no God. I mean, that's real hard to fix. When someone has just come to that point, and that's their mindset, and they're set with that, I don't know how you fix that, you know, when a heart is just set that way. That was something that the psalmist said. And sometimes the pain of this, the fact of the matter, that sometimes our reputation follows us. You know, we're wanting a good reputation, but sometimes a reputation just follows us when it's not so good. A fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. Sometimes, maybe the greatest fool is the one who is foolish and doesn't know it, and keeps saying everything in such a way where we all know he's a fool. You know, keeps airing his own opinions over and over again, even though they're foolish. I think that's what Solomon was saying in Proverbs chapter 18. But looking on here just a little bit more, you know, going down to verse 4 and following, I mean, same context, moving forward with it. If a ruler's anger rises against you, do not leave your post. Calmness can lay great errors to rest. There is an evil I have seen under the sun, the sort of error that arises from a ruler. Fools are put in high positions while the rich occupy the low ones. I have seen slaves on horseback while princes go on foot like slaves. Kind of painting an interesting picture for us here to think about and to try to understand. You know, there's some ironies here of foolishness and wisdom. You know, a ruler, we looked at this once before in a previous chapter, similar thought. If a ruler's anger rises against you, do not leave your post. Calmness can lay great errors to rest. What's the application? I mean, what's being said, and what do we need to see with this? If a ruler's anger rises against you, do not leave your post. Calmness can lay great errors to rest. What do you think about that? What does that say? What do you think? What are we supposed to learn from that? There's something we need to learn from the passage.
Well, I guess, again, you know, when you come under attack, to keep your head about you. Hold fast to your integrity. Don't give in to your emotions. I think that's the one thing that comes back to me is, you know, sometimes we want to retaliate, or we want to defend ourselves when people are saying lies about us. And the shouting is, you know, that's what I think people want. Fools want. They just want a lot of confusion on our head about ourselves.
You ever get chewed out for something? that is just not right. It's just not fair. I mean, somebody just chews you out, and I mean, it's not, what you're saying is just not correct. It's one of those situations where you ever just kind of have that chill that runs up your spine? You know, when you're just, I mean, you're taking some abuse and you're trying to figure out how do you respond to this. I mean, there's a couple of different ways you can respond in kind. Sometimes I hear people say, we just got to respond in kind. Okay, so now we have two fools, you know. All right. I mean, acting like a fool against a fool doesn't really help the situation. I think that's what Solomon's talking about here. You know, sometimes even if you're having to deal with a ruler, I mean, we don't understand this thing about, you know, a ruler. I don't think that necessarily has to mean we're like being dressed down by the king, so to speak. What if it's your boss, you know, who's just said something that's really unkind or dressing you down for something, maybe even he's right or they're right, okay? But it's the way that it's being done that just, you know, is really hard to deal with. I mean, the advice here that's being given is that, hey, stay calm. Kind of let this thing ride through for him. Don't leave your post. Don't go walking away. Just go stomping off. You know, oh, well, with the girls, with one in particular, we'll leave nameless. We really had to work on the idea that, wait a minute, we're having a discussion. The absolute wrong thing to do is to turn your back and walk away. You know, that doesn't work. You know, we're going to stand right here and we're going to have some discussion here. You know, I think that's in part here what Solomon is saying. Don't leave your post. Calmness can lay great errors to rest. What's he saying about being calm? What is the intention here?
Not escalate.
Yeah, to not escalate.
Well, the New King James Version says conciliation, which right. Makes me think that there's some discussion or there's some sort of resolution.
That's right. The idea of being calm is what's going to allow there to be some discussion and conciliation.
You mentioned one of your daughters, and it reminds me of one of ours, but the...
God bless your heart.
You know, if your mom and dad are on you about something, you did it, it's better just to say, okay, I'm sorry, rather than it's not my fault and keep escalating it. That's what it's saying.
Well, humility goes a long way and seems to kind of calm the situation. Often.
Would that be you and your three roommates? All the different dramas, and I told them, you need to calm in the storm. Uh-huh. Don't raise your voice, you talk calmly.
Education, going to college, education has a whole lot more to do than going to class every day. there's a lot of other learning opportunities.
The way the New American Standard reads here, I'm getting the impression that the ruler, his temper rises, but really without cause. Mm-hmm. He's some unjust accusation, perhaps. And he says, do not abandon your position. I think he's saying, if you're right, mm-hmm. and you know you're right, don't compromise your position, mm-hmm. but handle this thing in a very calm way mm-hmm. so that you can ease the temper of the king.
And back then, I think it was in chapter 8 where there was a similar phrase that was used as that. It said almost the same type of thing. That idea seemed to come through in that too. You know, that you might even be able to change the position of the ruler. It was the idea.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing sometimes how when we demonstrate the right attitude and a godly attitude, and there's that calmness, there's that humility that we should possess, about how some things work out. I mean, perhaps not on that day, you know, but over time, how some things work out. Isn't it amazing? So, some wise words here, you know, from Solomon in these ways. By patience a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks the bone. Proverbs 25, verse 15. That's what Solomon was saying. By patience a ruler may be persuaded. Yeah, can you change the mind of your boss? You know, can you change the position of your college instructor? You know, can you change the attitude of your spouse when there's a disagreement? Sometimes, depending how we deal with those things. So anyway, some good thoughts about that. Any other comments on that? Let's look here. Let's see if we, wait, there's some more comments I'll make here down in verses, let's go back to verse 5. There is an evil I have seen under the sun, the sword of error that arises from a ruler. Fools are put in many high positions, which, while the rich occupy the low ones, I have seen slaves on horseback, while princes go on foot like slaves. All right. What do you think here? Solomon's trying to relate to us. I mean, is it always the most qualified who are appointed to levels of position? Right? Is it always that way? Uh-uh. I mean, sometimes, I mean, if it's in a work environment or many other environments, really, we sometimes would walk away thinking, how did that person get that job? You know? It's like they don't know anything about what they're doing. You know, and we are amazed at times when we see other, sometimes subordinates, that are far more experienced and qualified than the one who's been given this job here. Now, Solomon is kind of placing this in one way here. Fools are in many high positions, and the rich occupy the low ones. What do you think he means here by the rich? I mean, I'm not thinking that's necessary. Does any other version say something different besides rich?
I don't think it means wealthy. I think it means more intelligent.
I think that's the idea.
Not necessarily wealthy.
I think that's the point. Or it's the idea that those who have some more wealth have done so because they weren't foolish. They thought things through, and they've come out ahead a little bit that way. And yet what we see sometimes, we see this still, sometimes there are fools in high places when there are some who are smarter that's subordinate to them. I mean, how can that be?
In bureaucratic circles, you hear it said sometimes that you can't fire someone, so you move them up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is saying the higher you are in authority, the more you can mess things up.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger the mess is. And it seems like we send the ones who shouldn't be there into that position so they can really mess things up.
I know. Why do we do that? I don't understand.
Well, it reminds me too, you look at society today, I get mad sometimes when I go to Walmart or wherever, and you see these people that are obviously abusing the system for assistance. And they dress better than I do, they drive a better car, have everything in the world. And here we are working, you know,
how can that be?
That's the same principle, I think, here.
Some inequities it's hard to deal with. Yeah. Look at verse 8. Let's read on. Whoever digs a pit may fall into it, and whoever breaks through a wall may be bitten by a snake. Whoever quarries stones may be injured by them. Whoever splits logs may be endangered by them. Okay. Let me work through that. Whoever digs a pit may fall into it. Why would you dig a pit? I mean, I think we're talking about roasting a hog here now. I mean, why would you dig a pit?
To capture someone?
Yeah, you're trying to capture something or someone. And I don't know that necessarily means, you know, physically digging a hole or digging a pit. It's the idea of laying a snare or setting a trap for someone. You better be careful. You might be caught in that pit.
Or if you keep making mistakes, or the same mistake.
Yeah. Why would you do it over and over and over again? You better think that thing through. I mean, it's sort of like if you're going to break through a wall, you know, what you'd have to start thinking, why are you breaking through a wall? Is it your wall to break through? Who owns the other side? If you're going to break through a wall, you may be bitten by a snake. Have you thought that thing through real good? You know, I go back, you know, many years ago, my dad had time to work on some of the projects. Wait a minute. Have you thought about what's going to happen when you do that? Well, I'm doing this. No. Well, when you do that, what's that going to lead to? Have you thought about that? No, I'm just trying to do this. No, stop. Think about what's going to happen when you do that. What's Solomon saying? If you think you're going to be so smart as to dig a pit, you know, to ensnare somebody, you better be careful. You might get stuck in the same hole. If you're going to break through a wall, you better make sure what's on the other side is yours. Have you thought about what's over there? Watch out for the snakes.
Why is the wall there in the first place?
Yeah, that's right. There's a reason there's a wall. You know, exactly. Whoever quarries stones may be injured by them. What? You ever quarry stones? A friend of mine works in the mining field, as he calls it. He works at a rock quarry. And they do things like use dynamite. He says, I got the best job in the world. You know, he says, I do maintenance and repair. And I blow things up with dynamite. And I drive Terex trucks and bulldozers. And he says, every day I get to go play in a rock quarry every day. You know, and he said, boy, he's so excited about working in a rock quarry. You know, can't believe it. You better be careful what you're doing. You know, whoever quarries stones might be injured by them. This is serious business. You know, whoever splits logs may be endangered by them. Have you thought that through? You ever cut down a tree before? You know, I mean, when on the farm, you know, I don't know how many trees we've cut down. We had to clear our way into the woods. We built a couple of houses yet over time. And there was no way to get to where we're going to build the house without putting in a road and clearing a lot of trees. We cut hundreds of trees. You know, it doesn't matter just how well you plan sometimes. Like, okay, I'm going to take this tree, I'm going to put it right over there between those trees right there. And it winds up laying this way. I mean, I've cut a lot of trees. I mean, you can cut and notch and wedge and stuff like that. And most of the time, you know, you can kind of put a tree where you want it. But every once in a while, that tree's got a mind of its own. And everything starts just fine, and then it turns and twists and jumps off the stump. And just stands there for a while. You know, and you don't even know which way to run because you can't tell which way it's going. You know, have you ever had that happen before? Last spring, there was a couple of walnut trees by the creek I wanted to harvest before we moved. And so they were not really easy to get at, and I really had to be careful. And there was this one walnut tree that was about this big. I mean, it was a beautiful 30 feet of log. You know, I told my son-in-law, Justin, I said, I really want to get this right. You know, this is a lot of nice lumber right here. And so it was kind of tough. It was a little bit on the bank, and there was the creek down here and everything. And so, I mean, you always have two means of escape. You got to figure that out. And I had to cut some brush out. And I said, okay, if it goes this, I'm heading that way. Or if something goes, I'm heading that way. Or I said, if something goes really wrong, I said, I'm running through the creek. Guess which way I got to go? I'd run through the creek carrying my saw, you know, and just hoping that tree wasn't for some reason coming back that way. Something went really wrong. It was one of those things where it was notch size, wedged it, it was leaning just right. I mean, everything was going to be perfect, and something snapped. Pop! And I said, uh-oh, something wasn't working right. And it snapped, and it turned and twisted and split halfway up the tree, and spun around like that, and about that time is when I don't know why I didn't drop the saw. I carried the saw through the creek. And I came out the other side, and the tree fell, and we were all okay. It was just one of those situations like where all I could say was, I see, son, that's what I was telling you. You got to be careful when you did this for you so you could learn, you know. That's what I thought about. Whoever splits logs may be endangered by them. You got to think some things through. If you're going to dig a pit, if you're going to snare somebody, you better watch out because you might get caught in that trap. If you're going to break through a wall, have you thought about there being vipers on the other side? You better think about that. If you're going to cut a tree down, you better have three ways of escape, not just two. And in the context here of wisdom and the fool, it seems to me, in part at least, is what he's saying is that, and as we go on here a little bit farther, is the fool doesn't think ahead. The fool has no plan. The fool does not think about the ramifications of the things that are said. The fool is the one who is going to argue with the king or with the ruler as opposed to keeping his peace and being able to maybe persuade the ruler. No, he's going to argue with the ruler. And the ruler just takes his stand even more firmly, even if he's wrong. That's what's going to happen. We've seen that, right? And so there's the comparison that's being made. He's setting this up, you know, that you know, here's what the fool does. Here's what the wise do. He's trying to tell us about being wise. Verse 10, if the axe is dull and its edge unsharpened, more strength is needed. But skill will bring success. What kind of skill he's talking about? Who is the one who takes the axe who is dull and keeps beating on that wood? The fool. The one who is skilled is going to take that axe and put an edge on it. You ever try split wood with a dull axe? I mean, I'm not good splitting wood with a sharp axe. I mean, I've split a lot of wood in Michigan and even in Tennessee. We burned a lot of wood there for a number of years. And I've told you before, I'm like totally uncoordinated. I've told you, I can't play sports. I have no ability, you know, to be able to take a ball and to throw it over there. It may go over there or over there. I have just no ability. I mean, that even goes to splitting wood when you're trying to hit that log and it's the that piece of wood in just the right spot. You know, so it takes me a lot of wax to get the right one. But now give me a dull axe on top of it. You know, you can actually take an axe that's dull and it'll bounce off a piece of wood and hit you back in the head. Now, I haven't done that. But I've heard of that happening. You know? And here, I mean, what Solomon is saying, I'm not sure what experience Solomon the king had really in splitting wood. But he knows how it needs to be done and he has seen those who have done it. You know, if the axe is dull, there's a lot more strength needed to get the job done. Just from a common sense standpoint, you got to work a whole lot harder to get the work done. But the skilled or wisdom has an advantage here. And is going to realize that, man, this thing needs sharpened. And sharpens the axe in such a way where it can be more beneficial. See the comparisons he's making? I mean, it's down to some real things that we can understand and relate to. You know, whether it's relationships. You know, if you have to talk to the ruler who's being unreasonable, how do you deal with that? So even if you're working by yourself splitting wood, use some wisdom about how you do that. And then really, the applications will roll forward here and some other things that he says. But these are all things we understand. I mean, we can see that in common life. We can understand the principles here and make some applications. Our time is just about gone here. Your comments. What comments would you have? Yeah.
But I have cut me with the and boy, it does take a lot more strength, a lot longer to get it done. So that's why times always razor sharp.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. Watch who you build gallows for. Go ahead.
Which, you know, I don't, you may be talking about wood, but it seems like it's maybe a situation that if you can rightly look at the situation and apply the right tool or the right reasoning to it, then it's sure. Easy.
It's easier to get right. That's right. Okay. Yeah, you can make application with that. Because really it's about people issues is what it turns out to be as we go on. All right, good conference, y'all. Lord willing, we'll take up there on Wednesday night. Hey, if you can, those who can't, let's move up to the front here. Let's move up.